turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 108, and this is going to be recording the message that I preached yesterday at the church in which I pastor, Mount Tabor Baptist Church, from Joshua chapter 6 on Joshua and the walls of Jericho and how they tumbled down based upon their marching around 7 days, and on the seventh day marched around 7 times, and God's plan for them in that, and how they obeyed God's plan, and how he worked through that mightily to bring down the walls of Jericho. It's a great message, great passage, and should be an encouragement to you and a challenge to you to walk by faith. So stay tuned for that. Before we do that, I want to direct you to a few announcements. First of all, make sure that you're a registered user of the website. This enables you to access the updates through email anytime that there is a change to the website. You'll be notified automatically by email. Also enables you to provide feedback through any of the show notes, and I encourage you to do that. If you have direct feedback you want to give to me, I encourage you to do that at steve@thelegacypodcast.com. Again, that's steve@thelegacypodcast.com. Second up is to make sure that you are sharing your friend or telling about us to your friends and family on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. That continues to get the word out. We're looking to, of course, continue to grow those listeners who are interested in building a legacy and who might find the Legacy Podcast beneficial. Make sure you share that with them. And then third up is to support the show by visiting our affiliates. We have several affiliates on the center right column of the website. These are people that I have worked with and purchased things from, or somehow know in a way that I am able to put my stamp of approval on them. And usually they have something to do with legacy building. And so today up, there are two. First of all, U.S. Legal Forms. The reason why I am associated with U.S. Legal Forms is because they're the best place that I know of online to be able to acquire the necessary legal documents that you need to have in place to be able to build your legacy. So, for example, everybody needs to have a will, a power of attorney, and advanced medical directive. You can acquire those through U.S. Legal Forms for about $50 per couple. And this is just a great way of being able to have those, have that information at your disposal, be able to get it accomplished, get it all printed out, typed up, and secured away for your future and for your children. And what a great legacy you can leave by having all those legal documents in place. So U.S. Legal Forms is the best place to get that. Second up is Liberty Classroom. Liberty Classroom is a great resource for those of you who are interested in U.S. history or Western civilization, or if you're looking to provide a history course for your children, or even a logics course. They have logics and introduction to Austrian economics. And, of course, Austrian economics is free market capitalism. And it's a great way for you to be aware of all of those aspects of our culture and country, and to be able to study that through historians and economists who actually enjoy the subject that they teach, who actually believe in the rule of law and the civilization that our Western world has created, and yet they're also willing to look at the failures of the Western culture and to address them head on. And so it's a great resource, perfect for homeschoolers. You can look at the quizzes, you can look at the online, you can listen to it, you can download it, you can look at the notes that they have for each lecture, and just all different kinds of resources you can acquire for only $99. You get all of that information. And so it's an unbelievable resource. Liberty Classroom, check it out. And then finally, if you like the show and you want to support the show, the best way of doing that is become a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is typically $30 a year. We have one more day. If you're listening to this on the 31st, or even I might not be able to get to change that until a couple days from now. So you might be able to squeak in under the cover. But Supposed to be one more day until the end of the sale price on the Legacy Partner Program. $10 through the end of December, and then it goes back to the regular $30. And that, of course, is a year membership to access all of the various specials that are available to our Legacy Partners. And we've got more coming, I promise. We've got people in the works who are wanting to offer some things. And so now's the time to sign up for that so that you can be aware of those things when they come on board. So consider becoming a Legacy Partner. And with that, that takes care of the introductory material. So now let's go ahead and listen to the message that I preached to Mount Tabor Baptist Church from Joshua chapter 6. Well, from a very early age, probably as Sunday school children, our children have learned the song about the fall of Jericho and the old spiritual hymn. I didn't know that it was a spiritual hymn or a Negro spiritual until I looked it up last night. But, of course, the title of it is Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho. And it goes like this: Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho and the walls came tumbling down. And the first verse says, you may talk about your kings of Gideon, you may talk about your men of Saul, but there's none like the good old Joshua at the battle of Jericho. And it goes back to the chorus. The second verse is, now the Lord commanded Joshua, I command you and obey you must. You just march straight to those city walls and the walls will turn to dust. And the third verse is, straight up to the walls of Jericho, he marched with spear in hand. Go blow the ram's horn, Joshua cried, for the battle is in my hand. And the last one is, the lamb ram horns began to blow, and the trumpets began to sound. And Joshua commanded, now children shout, and the walls came tumbling down. And so you can imagine that being sung out in the fields where the slaves were picking cotton or something like that, and how that was a great song of faith among the Negroes as they were conducting their business down the plantations, and how it has been passed down from generation to generation to where now our children sing that song on a regular basis and they know the story of Jericho. And so as I read this, you're probably, being reminded once again of this passage you've probably read or heard or at least heard about numerous times in the past. And so this is not a passage that is new to us, and yet it is one that is a good one for us to review regularly because it teaches us so much about faith. And we see some great examples of faith and some great principles of faith in it. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to look at those principles. But first, I just want to go through and look at the text itself. And to bring us kind of up to speed, what has happened so far is, of course, Joshua and the people of Israel crossed over the Jordan. We looked at that last time we were at this point. And they got into the promised land and they were heading towards Jericho. And Jericho was in the central part of Israel. And Joshua's plan was to go into the center part of Israel, conquer the cities there. And then he had the land divided. And from the divided land, he was then able to conquer the north and the south, respectively, after he had divided the land. So it was kind of a divide and conquer tactic. And yet we'll see that that was about the only military strategy that was used in the conquest. And so he's facing this great challenge as he comes to the walls of Jericho, because Jericho was one of the most strongest, I don't think that's a word, but the strongest enforced structures around the walls of Jericho. And we'll take a look at that here in just a moment. So in verses 1 through 5, what we see is the plan of attack. And it says that, now Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. The idea behind that is that this was a siege. And in those days, if you lived in a city that had great walls, such as Jericho, and you knew that an enemy was coming, what would you do is you would shut up all the doors and shut up all the places so that no one could come in. And they would just then stay and they would basically wait out the enemy until the enemy left, and they'd open up the gates and they'd go get their supplies, come back in. And it was a means of protecting themselves by their high walls. That was their means of defense. And so it says when they saw the children of Israel coming, they shut up all these walls and all these doors and so that no one could come into the land or come into the city of Jericho. Jericho itself means moon city, and it was probably a city that had as its center a worship of the moon god among the Canaanites. And it was fortified by a double layer of walls. Now get this, these walls, the outer wall was 7 feet thick. And then there was a gap between that wall and the next wall. And the next wall was 12 feet thick. So you've got 19 feet of walls. And in between those walls, they would build houses and fortifications of various kinds. And they would put these big beams across the walls, and then they would hang down houses from that. And so when we read, if you were to read earlier, we'll talk about it here in a moment, Rahab's house, it says, was built on the wall. So it was built between these two walls, and obviously without going into too much detail, that was a great place for a harlot to build her house because people would come in and out without much notice. And so they had this, she had this walled house, and it was on the edge of the wall there. And so it comes to verse 2. It says, "And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor." And the idea behind that, of course, is that God was already designing a plan of destruction for them, and he was just relaying that information to Joshua. And then verses 3 through 5, we see God's plan of defeat for the land of Jericho. And I think it's really interesting. What we have here is he doesn't use any kind of military tactics at all. What he basically says is that he says, I want you to march around and play some music. And then when it finally comes time for you to destroy the land of Jericho or the city of Jericho, I want you to shout. Certainly not the most conventional means of military tactics. And Joshua, being a great commander of military forces, he's probably thinking to himself, this is kind of strange that you would command such events. And yet that is the exact way that God designed it to be. And then in verses 6 and 7, we see the plan is told to the army. And so the general Joshua takes it to the other commanders and he says, all right, this is our plan of attack for Jericho. We're going to march around the city for 7 days. And on the seventh day, we're going to march around 7 times and blow our trumpets and shout. And then God will give us victory. And again, they're probably thinking to themselves, has Joshua gone crazy on us? I mean, how in the world is that going to be effective? And then the plan is carried out for 6 days in verses 8 through 14. So every day they go out and they march around the city very quietly, blowing their horns, taking the ark. And you've got this armed guards in front and the armed guards in behind. And in the center of that is the ark. And then on each edge of the ark, you've got these bands playing. And they march around Jericho. And most estimates say that it probably took about 30 minutes for them to march around Jericho. So maybe it took them 20 minutes or 30 minutes to assemble as an army. And then maybe a couple minutes to walk up to the wall. And then 30 minutes to walk around. So in an hour's time, they were completely done with the day's job. And they would go back to their camp. And they would sit. And they would think, this doesn't seem to be working. Nothing's happening. And yet that was all God's plan. And then Rahab is saved in verses 22 through 25. We see that she is spared and delivered along with all those who were in her house. And then in verse 26, there is a curse placed upon anyone who tries to rebuild Jericho. And it's interesting to note that Hiel, during the time of Ahab, remember the time of Ahab was a very wicked time. And there was all kinds of disobedience against the Lord. And Ahab and Jezebel were probably the two worst of the rulers of Israel. And during that time, there was a man named Hiel who tried to rebuild Jericho. And as a result of that, his firstborn son was killed along with many of his other family. And then in the New Testament times, we read about Jericho, and Jesus went to Jericho, but it was built about 2 miles from the present location of, or from the location of Jericho at this time. So although they renamed the city Jericho, it was not the exact same location. So that's why it was able to last without being destroyed and God's curse being upon it. And then in verse 27, we read about the fame of Joshua and how as a result of what took place and the destruction of Jericho and the victory there, how many people began to follow after Joshua and trust him as they did with Moses before him. So, as I mentioned earlier, this passage is really about faith. And what we read in Hebrews chapter 11
is instructive for us. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 30, it says, "By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days." And then in verse 31, "By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace." And so this event is all about faith. And what it teaches us is five principles of faith. And so let's look at those right now. Number one is, faith sees the future promises of God as present realities. Faith sees the future promises of God as present realities. And back in verse 2, if you recall, it says, "And the Lord said to Joshua, 'See, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor.'" Now, at the time that the Lord is saying this to Joshua, the city was still a walled-in city. They had not done anything victory-wise. And yet, when he says, "See, look at the city, I've given it to you," Joshua looks at it and he says, "Well, looks like it's a whole city right now. Nothing wrong with it at this point. It's still occupied. There's still high walls." And yet, by faith, he was able to receive that promise that was a future promise as a present reality. And so he acted upon it. And that's exactly what faith does. In fact, in the Hebrew writing, we have this understanding of it's called the prophetic perfect tense. Now, I'm not going to get too technical here on the grammar, because most of us, including myself, didn't do so well in grammar. In fact, anytime I try to teach my children grammar, they end up crying and calling their mom, saying, "He's messing things up," because I can't really. In fact, I learned more grammar in seminary, I learned Greek and Hebrew, than I ever learned in English class growing up. And so I'm not going to belabor the point with Hebrew grammar here, but it is important to note that a perfect tense is something that has occurred in the past, that is completed in the past, but has lingering results to the present. That's what a perfect tense is in the Hebrew. Well, they have this prophetic perfect tense in the Hebrew, which means that it's something that is written in the perfect tense, but has not yet happened. And the reason why he does that is so that he might indicate the idea that there's this concept of a future promise, but it's just as good as if it was in the past tense, just as good as if it had already occurred, just as good as if it was in the perfect tense. And that's the idea behind this. He says, "See, I have given." It's a done deal. Even though it had not yet completed its actual act, it was as good as done. Faith, in other words, sees things from God's perspective. I've mentioned before that when we look at things from God's perspective, because he is outside of time, he sees the beginning and the end and everything in between at one snapshot. It's as though we were to look at a ruler and we were to see on that ruler the beginning of the ruler, the end of the ruler, and all the little marks in between at one time. We could look at it all. Well, that's God's perspective of what's going on in our world. You know, we think it was 2012. It's almost done. Wow, time flies so fast. God sees it all. He sees the beginning of time, and he sees the end of time, and it's all right there. And so when he presents that to us, it gives us a perspective of the future promises in such a way that we can anticipate them as already completed realities. And so by faith, you can take what God has promised and consider it done. Your salvation, done. Your sanctification, it's done. Your glorification, it's done. The new heavens and the new earth, it's done. The gathering of all of his people together, it's done. The judgment of the world, it's done. The dwelling of God with man for all eternity, it's done. All those things, although they have not yet been completed now, they're as good as completed, because God is faithful. And so when we exercise our faith in such a way that we can take the promises of God as present realities, we find that same example being done here among the people of Israel, and Joshua in particular. And then number two is, faith follows God's plan even when it doesn't make sense. Faith follows God's plan even when it doesn't make sense. The plan of attack to overthrow Jericho was strange. I mean, can you imagine Joshua gathering his leaders together? He says, "Okay, this is our plan of attack. Okay, for 6 days, we're going to walk around this thing, being very, very quiet. We're going to walk around the city, and we're going to have the ark in the center. We're going to have the, you know, the armed guards in the front, armed guards in the back. In the middle, we're going to have this music playing, horns blowing. And we're going to walk around it for six days, half hour, come back. We're going to rest the rest of the time. And then on the seventh day, we're going to do it for seven times. But here's the trick. On the seventh time, we're going to shout. And that's going to do it. Can you imagine what the people were thinking? They were probably thinking themselves, this is crazy. You mean to tell me that we're going to do the exact same thing for 36. We're going to do about 40 times. And on that last time, we're going to shout and that's going to bring victory? That's crazy. And yet by faith, they obeyed even when it didn't seem to make sense. No doubt the people of Jericho were looking down over those walls as they marched around, thinking to themselves, what are these Israelites up to? What a bunch of loonies. I mean, they're just walking around here playing some music? I mean, this is crazy. They were probably throwing stuff down on them. I remember the I don't know if some of you watched the VeggieTales episode or whatever of the walls of Jericho and how they were being slushed. They were throwing down slushies on them, you know. You guys probably didn't watch it. You're all together. Well, anyway, it's a good little spoof on the walls of Jericho and how the people living in Jericho would throw down these slushies on the people walking around. Now, I'm sure that they didn't throw down slushies in Joshua's day, but they were probably throwing down insults and mocking them and saying, oh, what are you guys doing? You can't, walking around here is not going to get you in. You know, can you imagine what they were saying? And yet that was the plan of God. Proverbs 14, verse 12 says, there is a way that seems right to man, but its end is the way of death. Proverbs 16, verse 9 says, a man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. Proverbs 19, 21, there are many plans in man's heart. Nevertheless, the Lord's counsel, that will stand. And Jeremiah 10, verse 23 says, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. Sometimes God's plan doesn't make sense, and yet we are required to obey it anyway. Imagine Jonah. Remember Jonah? Story of Jonah. God called Jonah and says, Jonah, I want you to go to the worst enemy of your people, and I want you to preach the gospel to him. Now, Jonah responded the way most of us would respond, right? He said, there ain't no way I'm going there. And so he gets in the boat, goes the opposite direction. Of course, God rebukes him for that and makes him spend some time in a big fish and gets swallowed up and spit back down on the shore. And so God says, now I want you to go. And he finally goes, right? And God delivers Nineveh as a result of that. And then we see also of Paul. Remember Paul, when he was instructed by his friends and companions, says, don't go back to Jerusalem. If you go back to Jerusalem, there's only trouble waiting you. And what does he do? He says, no, that's plan. God's plan for me to go back to Jerusalem. I'm going back to Jerusalem. Didn't make sense. But he did anyway. And what about Jesus? He was told the same thing by his disciples. He says, go back to Jerusalem. The Pharisees are waiting to kill you there. Don't go there. And yet, what did he say? He said, no, that's the plan of God. It doesn't make sense right now, but it will in the future. And sometimes that's the way we need to be. We need to be able to exercise our faith and say, you know what? It doesn't make sense right now, but this is what God wants us to do, and so we're going to obey. How much sense does it make to love your enemies? And yet, what does Jesus say? Love your enemies. How much sense does it make to rejoice when persecuted? And yet that's God's plan for us. How much sense does it make to be a one-woman man or a one-man woman? And yet that's God's plan for us. How much sense does it make to put others before ourselves? And yet that's God's plan for us. How many other commands can we think of that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense when you think about it? And yet it's the reality of God's plan for us. And so by faith, we follow God's plan even when it doesn't make sense. And then thirdly, faith calls on God to act. Faith calls on God to act. You know, we read about these events and we think, well, what was the significance of the ark going around the city? And what was the significance of the ram's horns blowing? there were several verses there where ram's horns being blown were used over and over and over again. And God was trying to indicate the point, look, you've got to make sure you follow this precisely to the detail. You want to make sure that your ram's horns are blown. And then finally, on the seventh day, on the seventh time around, they're supposed to shout. Well, what's the significance of all that? The significance of all that was it was a way of calling out to God and saying, God, you're the one who's fighting this battle. And we are doing these things as a means of calling out to you, for you to work, and for you to act. Psalm 50, verse 15 says, call upon me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. Psalm 91, verse 15 says, he shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble, and I will deliver him and honor him. Jeremiah 29, verse 12 says, then you will call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will listen to you. Psalm 55, verse 16, as for me, I will call upon God, and the Lord shall save me. And Psalm 86, verse 7 says, in the day of my trouble, I will call upon you, for you will answer me. I know some of you have probably seen on television or heard advertised, or maybe you even have in your family, among your grandparents or something like that, these emergency call button. So like if, grandma falls or something like that, she can push on that button and it immediately notifies the EMTs or, notifies you or whatever. It's an emergency call button. And that's really the way faith is, that we are to call upon God to act. When we get in a time of trouble, when we get in a time of difficulty, we have to have a means by which we can call upon God to act. And this was the way that God had designed for the people of Israel in Joshua to call upon God to act, to go and blow their horns and then to shout. And when they shouted, when they blew their horns, and when they walked around carrying the ark, God was supposed to act, and he did. And so God provides us a means by which we can call upon him. When you are in trouble, we can call upon God to act, and we will be assured that he will. Are you in need of God to act in your behalf? Then call upon him. And he will. And then number four, faith sides with God and his people even when all around are not. Faith sides with God and his people even when all around are not. We see this exemplified in Rahab. And to back up a little bit, we need to recount what took place when Joshua sent in the spies into Jericho. And we see this recorded in chapter 2, if you want to flip back over there. Chapter 2, verse 1, it says, now Joshua the son of Nun sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, go and view the land, especially Jericho. So they went and came to the house of the harlot named Rahab and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search the country. So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered into your house, for they have come to search out all the country. So the king of Jericho realizes what's going on. He goes to Rahab and says, look, you've got some spies here. Deliver them over. And so what does Rahab do? Verse 4 says, then the woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, yes, the men came here, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened as the gate was being shut when it was dark that the men went out. Where the men are, went to, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them. And this is one of those places in the Bible where they lied. She lied. And God really rewarded her for it. And so this is an ethical dilemma that theologians have, where it seems to be where she protected the people of Israel. In the process of protecting them, she actually lied in their behalf. And this goes back to some of the reasons why some people say that during the Holocaust in Germany, those Christians who lied in behalf of protecting the Jewish people were doing what was right, even though that they were lying. And so this is ethical challenge. I'm not really preaching on the truthfulness of or lying at this point, but it is an interesting note there. So what she does is she basically preserves the spies, and as a result of that, they make a contract with her, or she makes a contract with them and says, look, I saved your life. Now when you go back and you come to conquer this city, allow me to live with all those who are in my house. And so sure enough, they agree to do that and give a sign of a scarlet thread hanging out the window. And so when they go, they're able to save her out. So James chapter 2, verse 25 says, likewise was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way. And so her faith that was actively at work in protecting the people of Israel was rewarded. She sided with God and his people even when the whole city was not. And so she was willing to leave her people and the security of her own place and side with God's people. Jesus said this, "Unless you are willing to leave your father and mother and follow me, you are not worthy of me." Sometimes we are called upon to forsake all so that we might side with God and his people. In our culture, it's becoming increasingly more hostile towards Christianity, more hostile towards God. And there may be a time in the future where we will be called upon to forsake all, to allow all of our possessions, to allow all of our relationships, all of these things to be compromised and to be at risk for the sake of the gospel and the sake of aligning ourselves with God and with his people. Are we willing to do that? It's what faith requires. Rahab was willing to do it. And certainly we need to as well. So often we try so hard to be in the majority. Well, I found it in the scriptures that rarely are the majority in the right position. It's usually the remnant. It's usually the minority. It's usually the faithful few that God rewards. We must be on God's side and side with his people, even if we are the only ones doing it. And then number five, faith accepts the restrictions aimed at preventing temptation. Faith accepts restrictions aimed at preventing temptation. I think it's interesting to note that God commands that the people of Israel totally and completely destroy everybody and everything in Jericho. Now, he does this over and over again. He does this with the city of Ai. He does it with other places all over the Canaanite lands. And we ask ourselves, why in the world would God be such a destructive God? Why would he call the people of Israel to destroy all the children and all the mothers and all the women and the young people and all the oxes and all the camels and everything else that's in Jericho? Why would he be so destructive in this matter? Well, it's so that there might not be any attempt at assimilation. You know what assimilation is? Assimilation is where you basically become like the culture around you. And the greatest danger that God knew of the people of Israel was that they might become like the Canaanites. He wanted them to be a distinct people, a separate people, a different people. He wanted them to be a light on a hill. And if they were to go into the land of Israel and they were to assimilate to the culture of the people around them, if they were to assimilate with the Canaanites and they were to hold on to some of their practices and some of their artifacts and some of their ways of life, he knew that it was going to be a problem. And in fact, it later did become a problem. And they did assimilate with the cultures around them. And as a result of that, they went into Assyrian captivity and Babylonian captivity and eventually into total destruction for the most part. And so faith accepts the restrictions aimed at preventing temptation. And then we see also the requirement to rebuild Jericho. What was wrong with rebuilding Jericho? Well, it might conjure back up the whole idea of being like the Canaanites. And so God puts a curse upon that. Matthew chapter 5, verse 29 says it this way. In another relations, he says, "If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. It's more profitable that one of your members perish than for your whole members to be cast into, or whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is more profitable that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be thrown into hell." Matthew chapter 6, verse 13 says, "And do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever." I'm reminded of some standards that Billy Graham put into place in his ministry. And one of those standards was that he told everybody, and everybody knew it, that he was not going to dine with a woman other than his wife alone, ever. Another one was that he was never going to be in a vehicle with a woman, ever. And several times he was challenged with this, where he would be picked up at the airport by a female, and no one else was in the vehicle. And he would say, "You need to go find somebody else, because I'm not riding the vehicle with you." Now, was that just being strange? Well, maybe. But what was he doing? He was putting certain restrictions and certain parameters around him so that he would not be tempted to assimilate like the world. So that he would not be tempted to fall. Are you placing restrictions on your life to prevent temptation? Should be. Are you resisting restraint put on you by others that would prevent temptation? Shouldn't resist that. Now, sometimes it can become unreasonable. I know that the Pharisees, out of a good intent, put all kinds of barriers around the law so that they would not overstep the bounds of the law. And it got to the point where they were so focused on those that they actually forgot what the law was. And that was the problem in the New Testament that Jesus came about. And so you can have an inaccurate balance of this as well. But certainly, there are restrictions that need to be in place and certain warnings that need to be taken heed to of, and ways in which we can prevent certain temptations. And that's what faith does. And so, by way of conclusion, I want to ask, are you facing an insurmountable wall? Maybe it's in your family, or maybe it's in your relationships, or maybe it's spiritually, or maybe it's financially, or maybe it's with your health, and you're facing this challenge that just seems insurmountable. It seems like the walls of Jericho. How in the world are you going to be able to gain victory over it? Well, the answer lies in faith. You must have faith to see the future promises of God as present realities. You must have the faith to follow God's plan, even when that plan doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You must have the faith to side with God and His people, even if you're the only one doing it. And you must have faith to accept the restrictions aimed at preventing temptation. And if you'll do that, then those walls will come tumbling down. Let's pray.
And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do to change your life?